Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you are releasing a book and you want to go audio and you're an indie and you don't know how the book is going to do yet, it's not worth it when you're in that position to splash out the money for an audio production unless you're reasonably sure you're going to recoup it.
Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, author of The Thunder Heist, and I am joined by my fellow writer, Dirk Ashton.
Hello, I am Dirk Ashton, author of the Paternus Trilogy, and maybe someday even some more books.
Ooh, exciting. And we are joined by a very special guest, Travis Baldry. Travis, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much.
So for people who aren't aware of your work, Travis, do you want to just give them a quick introduction to kind of the different types of writing work and production that you do?
Currently, I am a full-time audiobook narrator. If you listen to audiobooks, most people know me from Will White's Cradle series. Before that, I made video games for 20 years, Torchlight, Fate, Rebel Galaxy. I don't really do that anymore. And most recently, accidentally, I wrote a novel that was acquired by Tor called Legends and Lattes, which is re-releasing in November.
Awesome. Yeah, we're going to get to all of that. I thought for this episode, it'd be really cool to talk a bit about kind of audiobooks and just what life is like as an audio narrator of books and games. How did you first kind of get into that? Like when you were starting out in that games industry, as you mentioned, was that the kind of initial starting point?
Not really. I never actually wanted to be a narrator, and I'm certainly have no acting background. This was never really a twinkle in my eye. I'm a software engineer and an artist and a designer, so that's what I did in games. I did some VO toward the end, but only because it was easier than getting a bunch of people to do it. I got into audiobook narration kind of by accident. I started doing it on the side. My kids didn't need me to read to them anymore. And I put together most of the professional equipment I needed because I didn't want to pay for studio space for hiring people to do VO. Mm-hmm. So I had this stuff and I stumbled across ACX, the service that Audible runs jointly with Amazon for publishing for audio for indies. And I decided to audition for some stuff. And it turned out I really liked it. And then I kept doing it for years. And I finally decided, I don't really want to make games anymore. I'm just going to do this. And so that's what I did.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but when did you start? Because you've become one of the bigger sought after names now.
I actually don't remember. You know, the easiest way is me for to go to Audible. Here, I'll go to Audible real quick. I'll tell you.
Yeah, when you went, just wondering when you first, because just so people know why you're doing that. ACX is where a bunch of narrators who want to narrate books can put up reels and their bios and what they've done. And authors like me or Jed can go in and find narrators for their books. And then you can either do a 50-50 split or you can of the net that you get Or you can just pay anywhere from 100 to how many?
Thousands, if you want to.
Thousands, thousands of dollars.
Thousands. Let's just say thousands on behalf of all narrators.
Per finished hour. And to give you an idea, I paid my narrator $200 an hour, which is in the low range, to do the three Paternus books for audiobook. Travis is no longer in that range.
Because I was going to say.
and he's also booked out something like 3 years at this point. Because,
so my range depends. So I have an answer for you. I started in 2017, at the beginning of 2017. So I guess I've been doing this for like 5.5 years, roughly.
Yeah.
My range varies because once I start narrating on a series, I don't change the rate for that series because it's way too easy to get into a position where you're using it as leverage over an author. And the more entrenched you are in the series, the more power you have. And it feels a little hinky to me to take advantage of that. So I actually narrated a number of ranges, but they're just based on what was anchored in when they started. I'm still not that crazy expensive. There's plenty of narrators that cost more than me, but I'm also a nerd, so I save in a lot of places, and more of my rate goes to me than goes to most narrators. Anyway, it's an awesome business. I really like it. The people are great because it's book people, and book people are cool people. And I don't know, the vibe could not be more different than like games. Like the relationship between readers and authors and listeners and authors and listeners and narrators is super, super different than the relationship between people who play video games and people who make video games. They're just not even in the same universe.
How is that?
Yeah, I'd love for you to talk about that because I wrote a game that came out earlier this year. It was a very different experience to what it sounds like your kind of industry experience was like. But yeah, what was that like for you?
So games are basically viewed as a service at this point. And most of the magic of games, like the enthusiast era, is kind of over. So people think of them, you know, as we have such a wide range of kinds of games that can be made. You've got Red Dead Redemption 2, which is some inconceivable feat of engineering and money. And then you've got, you know, little pixel art games. But users don't really understand anything that goes on behind that. They don't know how many people are making things, how much time it takes, how much effort, how much money. There's just no connection to that. So there's just a fire hose of, frankly, pretty great content and a kind of antagonistic relationship where if you don't like something about a game, you feel that you have the ability to change it, that you can say, I don't like this, change it, suit me. Now, I paid you, or I'm going to pay you. But authors, I don't feel like have that same relationship. If you don't like a book, you just give it a star rating. I don't like it. And you move on. And that's the end of your relationship with the book.
Yes. You're like less connected to it with it. Almost.
Yeah. Nobody doxes an author because they didn't like the ending of a book. But that routinely happens.
Not nobody. It has happened.
Few, but it's very rare. But it's relatively
rarer.
Prevalent, yeah. Like in the games industry. Yeah. The relationship is just a lot more fraught.
It's a bit more hostile. Yeah.
It is a lot more hostile. And I feel like some of that is because people don't understand what it takes to write a book who don't write a book. It's not as big of a leap to make, right?
Right.
Yes.
And the concept of a book has not changed that much over time. It's words on a page that tell you a story. Storytelling styles change, but games now are unrecognizable from games in another era. They aren't the same kind of thing at all. You know, they change every year. So I don't know. It's just really, really different. And again, book people are nice people. And if you're reading books or you're listening to books, you're probably book people. It's just you've automatically cleared some bar of, I don't know, civility.
Yeah. If you have like the patience to sit down for 8 hours and like listen to or read a book, it probably means that you're,
there's a prerequisite
like a bit
there.
More disciplined.
You know, I think it just changes the tone of the relationship a lot.
Have you ever had a problem with an author?
Me personally?
Yeah, like, I mean, have
like
you
in
ever
communicating
have you
with
ever
them
butted,
as an
butted,
as an audit,
have you ever
as a
butted
narrator?
As a narrator, have you ever
no
butted heads on creative things?
No,
really, good.
No,
good.
So for the most part, most authors are just like, just go do your thing. You know, some authors have a lot of specifics that they want to hear or they care about for their book. And, you know, It's never been that complicated for me. You know, you have the baseline understanding that one person is reading your book and they're not literally going to become female or Italian or whatever, you know. There's an understanding that you literally are not those other people. So you already get that there's a basic like suspension of disbelief in the delivery of a book. So it's all just more like finer tuned stuff. So the furthest I've ever had with a disagreement is like an author says, I want these two characters to sound this way. And I'm like, well, I'm going to advise you to do this differently because these two characters serve a similar purpose and you're giving them the same accent and they're just not going to have a lot of separation. And the accent isn't implicit in the text. So why don't we pull them apart a little bit? Because I think you'll have an easier time making their banter recognizable or something like that. But people are really open to that kind of thing. That's not, unless you're a butt about it, it's never been a big deal.
I have learned a lot. Now I know a lot of friends of ours, Jed, that and Travis, who don't even listen to the audiobook.
Oh, I know lots of authors who don't.
They won't even listen. Now I'm a film guy from way back, and I used to produce and do all kinds of things. So I'm involved with all the processes. So I listened to them all, and if I thought something was either a mistake or was a little different, I would just let Nick know. Nick McGill, great guy, and he would just fix it, and it would just be fixed. He goes, "How's this?" Like 10 minutes later, and it's just like, "Okay, cool." Yep, and we'll just go on like that. But that's, and he wanted me to give him a whole list of name pronunciations, because a lot of them were out of almost all of them were out of mythology. So there are a lot from all over the world. So he wanted those pronunciations. So I just gave him little audio clips all the way down, and
And pronunciations are a big thing. And you do that with every author generally, unless they really don't care. Some authors literally have no idea how the words that they wrote down are pronounced and honestly could care less. Yeah. But a lot do. And generally what I do is I assemble a list and I pass it off. And I usually do a written out phonetic pronunciation with syllable emphasis that says, here's what I think it sounds like.
Do you plug that into the manuscript? When you're reading?
No, okay. I have it in a separate file that I can reference. But once I've kind of got it, I've said it out loud a couple times, it's sort of baked in. And I just have a list in alphabetical order that I can reference. And if they disagree, I just say, you know, here, send it back. If there's communication issues, I'll record it. But generally, that's enough. It depends on the book. Some words are just harder to articulate the pronunciation of because they're really weird. But
I'll just ask one more question and then I'll shut up and let you guys talk. How do you prepare and what kinds of things do you like to see from an author? Because everybody's going to have that question.
So my preparation time is very short because I really don't have any downtime between books. I generally skim the text. I do, since I read a lot of fantasy and you know, speculative fiction, I pull up the document in Word and I do a word search. Mm-hmm. Or not a word search, I do a spell check, and that will almost immediately flag almost all of the made-up words. So I scrape those all and assemble them. I find my mains, I check for keywords like accent and brogue and things like that, so I quickly figure out who's got accents or things baked into their characterization, things like ages, how they look, usually when they're introduced to something about their demeanor, and I'll get those things together, and then I've got my character list, and that's about it. And that prep goes down
with every work.
It's about 20 minutes to 30 minutes.
Wow.
Doesn't take very long to do.
You are efficient.
I'm a good cold reader. A lot of people prep much more extensively than that, and I totally respect that. And once upon a time, I prepped more than that. But for the most part, there's only so much I need to know about the book. Mm-hmm. It's like, the example I'll give is like, if you're reading a murder mystery, you don't need to know who did it at the end because you are presenting the book to the listener the way that they would be reading it. If you tip your hand because you know, what's the use in that? That's not information that you need to provide. Mm-hmm. You do need to know things like on page 500, we suddenly discover that he has an Irish accent and you've been reading him for like the last 7 hours. There are key things that you must know, but the actual shape of the story, you don't. It doesn't matter. Because you're going to reveal that as you go, and it's always going to be an accumulation of responses that you've built up from all the prior reading. It's not going to be something that you've done you know, just because you have foreknowledge. So in my opinion, the things that I personally need to prep are specific things that keep me from doing it wrong. And I know what those are, and I assemble.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
How do you keep track of who's speaking when? Because a lot of times authors will start with some dialogue and then it says, blah, 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 said. And you don't know when you start it. I know. My narrator would color code dialogue. I don't
touch any of my manuscripts. I'm a good cold reader. When you're reading, you're basically half scanning ahead the line. So,
so that's
not just
a skill.
Reading.
That's a real skill.
You're doing it even when you read on a book. You're doing it, but you do it a little bit more explicitly and with a little more intention when you're reading it to say it out loud. But you're basically pre-scanning. And there's a lot that's implied based on exchanges. If there's two people in a scene and you're exchanging between dialogue lines, you know it's going to be the next one. So there's lots of cues that you have. That gets more complicated if you know there's multiple people in the scene. But again, you're kind of scanning for that as you go. Worst case, I mess up and I go back and I punch it in. And obviously that happens. But by and large, you have that information. It's the same information you have to understand how a sentence is going to break, like tonally in the middle. You know, is this going to be questioning? Is this going to be, you know, is this a dramatic moment? Where's this sentence going to go after this comma? You're scanning for like little key markers that give you the shape of where that narrative tone is going to go. And sometimes you guess wrong or you just make a misjudgment and then you just read it again.
Awesome. What was your experience like narrating the Cradle books? Because I know like that's such a massive series. We've had Will on the show before. Like, did it feel massive when you were starting out with it, or was it you sort of entering
into
that world?
No, I didn't know where it was going to go when I started out. I had no idea where it was going to go when I started out. They're always a blast to read because Will's a great writer, and he knows how to write these really lean, propulsive books that have really well-articulated characters. They have his great characterization. All the characters are so distinct, and they do it largely with dialogue. You can read almost any line, and you can tell who's talking. And writing good dialogue like that is an incredible skill. So they're a blast to do. But when I first started, I didn't have any idea where this was going to go, you know.
For sure.
And honestly, I don't think most people did either, because I think when I read the first one, he was just getting to Ghostwater.
Got it.
I think a lot of people recognized how good it was going to be till probably book three. When Black Flame hit, you get about halfway through Black Flame and then the pedal goes down and then it just never released again for the entire series. Enough of the cast has been assembled that you've got the team and it all starts to really go. And so it hadn't fully, I don't think it had fully engaged out in the world yet how good it was going to be. And then it just kept getting better. Every book was just better. And more and more cool things got added without ever slowing down. Man, I really respect the way that Will has managed to make his world big without bogging it down.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you get that many books in, and all of a sudden you've got like eight POVs and maybe one day passed over the course of this entire book.
But
Will prunes the branches and everything stays propulsive. It's really pretty impressive.
The books are quite short too.
They are, but they get longer as they go, right?
You know,
they get a little longer.
I have to admit, I've only read the first one.
What?
Yeah,
what?
I know.
You monster. Know. Well, then you don't know.
Dude, I don't know yet.
I'm going to leave now.
Get out.
I have also only read the first book as well. But maybe I'll listen to the audiobooks. Wow, now that I have the narrator right here in front of me.
You're revealing the horrible shortcomings as human
beings. Yeah, sorry, everybody. It's a great first book, though. And like, yeah, you can definitely
The book doesn't even give you a glimpse. You're just barely brushing the surface of it. You have...
Yeah.
Almost none of the amazing characters that show up that really make the whole thing sing. Man, if you've ever got a couple of spare minutes to rub together, you should absolutely get a little bit further in. And then you probably won't be able to stop. I predict that once you get into Black Flame, the hook will be set and you won't be able to pull
it out. That's what everybody tells us.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep,
That's both enticing and concerning at the same time.
I'm just Travis. How
Hey, no, I respect it, man. What has it been like for you, and how has it affected your kind of narration of those books as the series has become bigger? Like, have you felt any more pressure? Like, have you changed anything about your approach, or have you just continued keeping on?
For the most part, it's just keeping on. I'm a little different as a narrator. It's been years now since I started. I think a better narrator than I was when I started. And also there's a certain amount of, now with the knowledge of where the series goes and the ultimate tone that develops after the first couple books, I'm constantly thinking, boy, it'd be great to just re-record the first two, knowing the ultimate tone that he's going to strike. Because I don't think he knew where it was going to go tonally when he first wrote the first book. And I think that there's a shift that starts to happen. It's a little organic, but if I knew that ahead of time, there's just slight tweaks that I would make to the way that I did it. And obviously, I'm a better narrator than I was. I say this after saying that you don't need to know every beat that happens in a book. And again, I don't, but tone is different. Tone is like the background music. It's like the narrative tone of a book is almost like the soundtrack. And knowing... what kind of music the author is going to be playing ultimately, I think is useful. Usually I'm pretty good at zeroing in on the tone. But when it develops like that, it would be cool to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Cause I guess, even if you're not changing anything about the words that you're saying, it's just like having that knowledge that like, oh, this is a story about this particular thing or whatever. Like, yeah, that's got to kind of subconsciously influence the way that you're performing it. Right. Like that's gonna
well, and when Unsold starts, Unsold is it's in a valley, right? It's in a valley with basically a bunch of backwards people that have no interaction with the rest of the world. So it's basically like a pocket world. The whole book starts in a pocket world and doesn't leave the pocket world until the end of the book. So the shape of everything else is totally intentionally obscured from these people.
Yes.
So it's everything is almost intentionally obscured. There's just no way to know what you're in for. I don't know.
Right.
That kind of makes sense. Yeah. No. Yeah. I in that way, it almost works that you maybe didn't know what the later book's tone would be, right? Because neither did
I can
the characters
say that, now,
that were
it's pretty,
within
it's a
that.
Great justification. Yes.
Yeah. Just rationalize it after the fact. as we kind of like wrap up towards the end of this episode, I'd love to know like what is your kind of best advice for authors who are thinking about getting an audiobook narrated, like how would you suggest that they approach that process?
Generally, I think just reach out directly to the narrator that you want. Find a narrator that you think fits your book well. All narrators are approachable. You don't need to put up auditions through ACX. Find the person you want. You know, if you're going to like make a cover, like commission cover art, you don't just put up an audition and say, hey, if you want, is there somebody want to make me a cover? No, you find artists that you like and you reach out to them because you have something in mind. And I think you should do the same thing, the same sort of intentionality when you're picking a narrator. You know, it's like anything else.
Yes, that makes sense.
Go get somebody you know is going to do the job that you want. The other thing is edit your book. Please, God, edit your book. We always know if you didn't.
I've actually had my Nick caught a lot of errors for me.
We'll absolutely catch
and
them.
And he tells me what they were. And
I mean, there's no replacement for reading something out loud. But there's a different, everybody's got errors. Yeah. Like, you can take any Big Five published book and there'll be some errors. Yes. I'm just saying there's a difference between some errors and I didn't get my book edited. And your narrator 100%. Will give you a narrowed gaze if they discover it was the latter.
All I would add to that would be that if you know you want to self-produce, meaning you want to produce the audiobook and not try to approach Podium or Tantor or Audible, and only if you have connections or have sold a lot of a book can you really get those deals as a first-time author. But if you have finished series, you might be able to get those deals. You're going to make less money per copy, but you might make up for it, and you won't
have mitigate
to
your risk because they'll front the money to get it produced.
Yeah,
this
front
is the other
money
advice
for the
I
recording.
Have. Yeah. If you are releasing a book and you want to go audio and you're an indie and you don't know how the book is going to do yet, it's not worth it when you're in that position to splash out the money for an audio production unless you're reasonably sure you're going to recoup it. So as a beginning author or somebody who's putting their first book out, put the book out first, see how it's going, and then extrapolate from those numbers to see if you can justify the cost. Because I see a lot of people and, you know, your book's got two ratings on Amazon and you sold 50 copies. Don't get an audiobook. Just make another book, you know, write another book. And when you get one that catches fire, then go get your audio made because then, you know, you'll benefit from it.
Yeah. I,
that's good advice.
I produced my first one and it took a year and a half before I made the money back.
And that's fine.
Which is good, but I was scared. I was wondering if I even wanted to do them. But the second one, which cost more because it was longer, recouped within a couple months. And the third one recouped in like 6 weeks.
Yep.
And then when I combined the three into the trilogy, it's paid for itself many times over at this point.
You don't have to reveal exact numbers, but like the stuff we've talked about in terms of how much your Paternus trilogy audio box set is selling is like staggering to see. So there's definitely
a market
for those. Yeah. Those like big, long,
and it just keeps going too. Trilogies. It's been December of 2019 that I put that out.
Wow.
And it just keeps selling just as well. It's crazy.
The main observation I want to leave with is that the book sells the audio in general. The audio doesn't sell the book. You could get the best narrator in the world, but if the book does not sell, the audio is not going to make it sell. So don't assume that that's going to move the needle because you have very few levers to pull to promote your audio. And while, yes, people do listen by narrator, it's not to the level where it's suddenly going to make your book a success if it wasn't already. So just bear that in mind before you decide to splash out the money.
Awesome.
A good narrator matters because you can definitely sink the ship, but they're not going to make the book float.
Yes, that's a good analogy. Awesome. All right, well, that's our episode. Travis, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah,
thank you so much for
having me. Travis will be back. Yeah, cheers. Travis will be back for next week's episode, so we will see you then. Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Everybody, thanks.
Thank you for listening or watching to this episode of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you like what we're doing here and you would like to help support the show, please go to patreon.com/wizards, warriors, and words. And for a monthly subscription, you can get access to bonus episodes that you can't find anywhere else. Currently, we have 5 bonus episodes up there, and we're going to be adding more in the future. So you can check that out. The link is down below if you would like to have a look. A special thanks to our high-tier patrons, Talon, Daniel, and Lewis. Thank you for helping support the show. We'll see you next week.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.